Vampire.
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 Der Podcast über Frauen, die schreiben.
Der Podcast über Frauen, die schreiben.
Der Podcast über Frauen, die schreiben.
Ein frohes neues Jahr, ihr Lieben. Gesundheit, Glück, Zufriedenheit und ein starkes antifaschistisches Immunsystem wünsche ich euch. Und damit hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge von Vampire, dem Podcast über Frauen, die schreiben. Mein Name ist Rasha Hayat, Autorin, Übersetzerin und Host und Erfinderin von Vampire. Bevor ich euch mehr über die neue Folge erzähle, haben wir aber noch eine großartige Ankündigung für euch. Und zwar könnt ihr uns im Februar endlich mal wieder live auf der Bühne erleben. Am 26. Februar werden wir im Rahmen des Literaturfestivals Kindly Invited Vampire auf die Bühne des Comedia-Theaters in Köln bringen. Ich freue mich wirklich riesig und bin extra stolz und happy, dass meine Gästin dort keine geringere sein wird als die großartige Theresia Mora. Also, sichert euch euer Ticket, bringt FreundInnen mit und kommt am 26. Februar in die Comedia nach Köln zu Kindly Invited und erlebt Vampire live auf der Bühne. Wir freuen uns auf euch. Alle Infos dazu findet ihr online und auch in unseren Shownotes. Jetzt aber zur neuen Folge. Als Auftakt fürs neue Jahr und auch für eine neue, für unsere dritte Staffel, haben wir uns mal was ganz Besonderes ausgedacht. Ich habe mir meine allererste Vampire-Gästin und gute Freundin Romana Bujarowska zurück ans Mikro geholt und sie als Co-Host eingesetzt. Denn für diese neue Folge darf ich selbst mal Gästin in meinem eigenen Podcast spielen und euch eine meiner großen Heldinnen vorstellen. Für diese Vampire-Reverse-Folge spreche ich mit Romana über die ägyptische Autorin, Ärztin und politische Aktivistin Nawal el-Saadawi. Saadawi hat über 50 Bücher verfasst, die teilweise verboten waren und auch noch sind. Ihr ganzes Leben lang hat sie sich für Frauenrechte in der arabischen Welt stark gemacht, war dafür im Gefängnis und musste eine Zeit lang auch im Exil leben. Saadawi ist im Jahr 2021 mit fast 90 Jahren verstorben und hinterlässt ein umfangreiches, wahnsinnig wichtiges und einflussreiches Werk, das junge Frauen in der arabischen Welt noch heute feiern. Mit Romana spreche ich vor allem über ihr großes Werk The Hidden Face of Eve, aber auch über den Roman Woman at Point Zero, beides inzwischen absolute Klassiker der feministischen Literatur der Swana Region. Vampire wird wie immer produziert von Katrin Albrecht und Asya Kurtuldu. Alles, worüber wir sprechen, findet ihr wie immer in den Shownotes verlinkt und wir freuen uns, wenn ihr uns auf Instagram unter vampire-podcast folgt, uns auf der Plattform eures Vertrauens abonniert und uns dort auch ein paar Sternchen hinterlasst. Das hilft im Algorithmus und der Sichtbarkeit der Show. Danke dafür. Und jetzt ganz viel Spaß mit diesem ganz besonderen Vampire Reverse mit Romana Bujarowska als Co-Host, mir selbst als Gästin und Nawal el-Saadawi als unsere Heldin. Romana Bujarowska, writer extraordinaire, one of my best friends and basically the reason that we have this podcast. Welcome back on Vampire. She's my first guest. 3 years ago, I think now. And now you're back. It's so nice to have you back.
Oh, I'm very happy to be here as well. And also, after we talked about Roxane Gay, also one of our favorite writers. And congratulations on how Vampire has risen and how it's taken over. The empire is getting bigger and bigger.
It really is. The vampire is getting really bigger and bigger. And I remember that, you know, because, you know, many listeners will not know this. You and I are very close friends and we talk on the daily, basically, have been ever since we've known each other for years now. But during the pandemic, we used to talk a lot. And at one point, I still don't remember which one of us it was, but one of us said, oh my God, our conversations are so brilliant. We should record them. In this, like, you know, moment of hubris. And then I thought, wow, that's a podcast. And so here we are, 30 yeah. episodes in, and you're back.
I'm so happy. And this was a great idea to talk about this particular writer. So I'm just going to dive in.
Yes, please.
I think this is a special, let's say that this is a special episode of this podcast, because now you get to talk about your favorite, one of your favorite writers. You have a lot.
I have a lot. It's like the narcissism episode of vampires. Like, I want to be in the spotlight too. No, I mean, seriously, it's like a lot of people have been asking me, so what do you read? And, it's always such a pleasure to talk to my guests about their writers. Many I know the writers they bring. Sometimes I don't know them, and it's just always so interesting to sort of get introduced to them. But I mean, as you also know, both of us, we share a lot of very special interests, people who people not necessarily might know. So I always feel like I really want to talk about some writers, but then nobody ever suggests them. So then I thought, why not turn around? And now I asked you kindly, and you accepted very generously to turn the tables and to be my co-host for today.
Yes, so today we are talking about Nawal El Saadawy, and I want to know, Rasha, how you got enamored with her and how you discovered her, let's say. How did you begin? Just tell us you're falling in love with Nawal El Saadawy.
Yeah, sure, of course. So, I'll say a little bit about who she is before I tell you about how she came into my life, because she's a very interesting person, I feel. So she died not too long ago in 2021, age almost 90, I think. So she lived a very, very long, very full life. She was a doctor, from her background. She's Egyptian. She was Egyptian. She was an activist, a writer, very renowned internationally. She was in prison briefly under Anwar Sadat for her activism, and then only released when he got assassinated and all the political prisoners were released, which I find is really funny. And she used to work at the Ministry of Health, and she lost her job at the Ministry of Health because she was advocating for women's health issues or bodily, what do you call it? Bodily
Autonomy.
autonomy. Yes, thank you. So she's pretty radical for also for her generation. And I got introduced to her in my mid or late 20s or something. I went to Egypt for a while and took language classes because I felt like my Arabic is not good at all. And I had a flatmate in Cairo, and she loved her. She really liked, and she introduced me to her, and I was like, I have never heard of this woman. And I studied comparative literature. So you think that you have like a broader view of literature, although I knew that, of course, every studies are limiting, but or limited. But then I got introduced to Nawal Saadawi, and I was like, and then she gave me, she actually, this is the first book I read was The Hidden Face of Eve. It's just the book we're talking about today. And it just blew my mind. I was like, wow, and then I just started researching and, understanding also my own limits in my literary journey, my understanding of what literature is, what feminism even is. And I just found her so fascinating. And then later over the years, I discovered that she was actually such a hero to so many Arabic women or all over the world, in all the Arab countries and all the Arab world, even young women today, and she's still very controversial. She's deemed, oh, maybe we talk about that later, how she's deemed critical of Islam, but I don't believe that's actually true. But it's just, she's such an interesting, complex character. She wrote, I think, 50 something books, and the most interesting thing for me, again, with something that's like a vampire theme, is that she's not translated to German, for example.
She isn't.
I think there are like a couple of books, but they have been out of print for 20 years or something, this is also for my German audience, this is also an introduction to a very important feminist writer.
I wonder how many other European languages she's been translated into. That would be interesting to see. I mean, I'm sure she's translated widely, but she has been translated into English. She was exiled in America, and her one of her memoirs, A Daughter of Isis, which mainly concerns her, and Isis, of course, here is not
It's not the terrorist,
it's
Egyptian goddess.
It's that's so unfortunate, you know, like
I
we
know.
don't have that many goddesses anyway, and now suddenly the name has been taken away. But let's
You know, the other day
reframe.
when we posted this on Instagram, someone actually wrote to me about this, and I think a couple of people unfollowed me, but I'm not sure if that's because of that. But so here we go. ISIS is not the Islamist terrorist organization. It's the Egyptian goddess of what? I don't know. I don't even know.
You know, I tried to I looked up ISIS and in terms of what she was, and I don't know that much about her. I have to say that she's some kind of a big deity,
She's a
but I
big deal.
don't. She is apparently
Mm-hmm.
she learned she taught. Well, she talks about her a little bit in The Hidden Face of Eve, but apparently that the goddess. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to go into it. She says that Zeus, the god, had like he was considered in the Egyptian system like the crocodile because he it was very interesting because he didn't have ears and he couldn't walk. And so like because a god doesn't have to have ears, he doesn't have to listen. It's like a total authority.
Oh my
But
God,
then it
that's
was the
such
goddess.
a metaphor again, you
Yeah.
know?
And then the ISIS then taught him how to walk. So she can teach him how to walk, but she can't teach him how to
To
listen. It was
listen,
quite
though.
interesting. And I think also she mentions ISIS a little bit in the beginning of at least in the Daughter of Isis, she talks a little bit. But she's like the main female god. Anyway, from what I understood, but yeah, I don't know much about Egyptian gods.
Still
In
space
any
to learn
case,
for all of us.
yes. In any case, it is yeah, what was I saying? This is her memoir about her childhood. I don't know what I was trying to say before I started talking about that, but
It's
it doesn't
okay.
matter.
That's like
Yeah,
we
that
trail
happens.
off. That happens all the time. That's
Let's
totally
say
fine.
that she has a lot of also just to explain to our audiences what she writes like and how you know what kind of things she talks about is yes, she's a feminist. She talks a lot about the history of women, especially in different religions, and also she's very insistent on making the connection between social class and between and women.
Yeah, I think she's a
And
socialist at heart, or maybe even a
yes.
Marxist or something. I think she even talks about Marx quite a lot in The Hidden Face of Eve. I think she's like a bona fide socialist.
She doesn't talk about Marx that much. I've seen some videos of her where she's talking about how leftists and these people who consider themselves revolutionaries are not really revolutionaries because they mistreated their wives. And she makes that point about Marx as well. And like, how can you consider yourself like a leftist, but also be authoritarian towards your wife. And she's very critical of that whole movement of men just considering that the left, you know, it's that the main fight in society is the class battle. It's not, you know, that we shouldn't really be concerned with gender, but and you know, she talks about how those two things are absolutely connected. And so she's mainly an essayist, I would say. She writes memoirs and she's written a novel, which is Woman at
I think
Point
she
Zero.
also wrote more than one
I'm
novel.
sure.
I'm sure also. There's the Woman at Point Zero that I have here.
Me too. That's the one I've read. She's written a novel that I have read.
Yeah, same. I have to say also, it's not very easy to come by her books. Some of them, most of them are out of print in English. You can get some in French also. None whatsoever in German that are interesting. So it's very difficult to find, like, to read her. You know, even in Arabic, which I find really interesting. Also, I'm guessing we're going to talk about later, is like in the foreword by Jumana Haddad, who is also an Arabic writer, Lebanese writer, I think third wave feminist, I would call her. She's a little bit older than the two of us. She's brilliant, and she writes this really emotional foreword to this book. And talks about how it was easier for her to get Nawal's work in English than in Arabic, that she read it in English first because she couldn't find it in Arabic because it was banned everywhere. Like she couldn't, it could, it wasn't possible to yeah, it wasn't available to her. But Woman at Point Zero is like a very short novel about a sex worker who is on death row for killing her pimp, basically. That's, I guess, that's the gist of it. I have to say, I reread it also now because we wanted to talk about it. And I have to say, as she's not a very good novelist, if I may say so. It's very straightforward and basic. You know, she's not an artist as such, I would say. Like, she's not... I wouldn't say if you want to have like beautiful language or sentence structure or whatever, this is not the book you want to read, but you can feel that she has like this deep knowledge and deep empathy for these women, or this woman especially, and writes, I guess, you know, socially relevant to her, socially relevant stories in form of novels. I think also because she started to get a bit of a reputation in the West also as a like Arabic feminist fighter or a feminist activist. And you know how the Westerns are, you know, they're like, women have to write novels. So I'm guessing, like, I can imagine her also saying, okay, so I'm just going to write a novel so the Westerners will read me, you know? But still, it's absolutely worth reading because it's very, you know, crushing and close to this character, I feel like.
2 points. One about finding her, and generally discovering her. So the first time I saw that she existed, it was when she died, and that's when a lot of us found out that there was this badass Egyptian feminist. So that's how blind we are in the West. Like, we had no idea. I had no idea that she existed. So then, and then after a while, she started getting viral clips on Instagram.
Yeah, she's a little bit of an Instagram TikTok sensation, which is so great. Yeah.
And so
I
thought,
she gives the best interviews. Like, when you look at the clips, she's this cranky old lady who, like, you know, every interviewer is basically getting schooled, you know, and she's getting offended by everything. Like the thing you just said about Marx, I just saw, like, yesterday I saw a clip where, you know, an interviewer would introduce her as basically the Arabic Simone de Beauvoir, and she would get so offended and would be like, no, you know, Simone de Beauvoir, she was obsessed with Sartre and she was always jealous. I'm much freer than her. it's so funny.
There's also about Middle East. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
there's
that's also the middle of fire. What?
It's like, why Middle East? So that's like me saying, she said, if I go to England, she said, I'm going to say I'm going to the Middle West. She takes these, you know, these kind of points of reference that we take for granted that are so Western centric. She destabilizes them, and she really opens our eyes. And so for, especially now in the context of everything that's happening today, someone like her, who speaks so clearly, and we're going to reiterate that probably many times, is the clarity of what she's saying. That's so mesmerizing.
Frank and just like to the point. Yeah, she doesn't bullshit.
So truthful. No bullshit. Yeah. Very true. And so correct. It's like you read her and you think, wow, I mean, she just framed something that I have been thinking about for a long time and I didn't know how to say it. She framed it in 3 sentences.
Yeah. I mean, when she said, you know, what the interview just mentioned, when she said about the Middle East, and then the interviewer says something about the Middle East and she stops and says, let me stop you right there. Middle East. Middle of what? You know? And that's the question. It's exactly, middle of what? Yeah, sure. Yeah. You know, it's like in the middle of these empires that created this place of the earth.
So she became, let's say, one of the things why there's a revival, let's say, is that oddly enough, she's become popular after her death on social media. And it was very hard for me here in Macedonia to find her books. Now, I find a lot of similarities from how I think and what I write and everything that I see, because I am from the Balkans and we have a lot of influence from the Middle East.
Yes, the Middle East. Middle
so we were part of the Ottoman Empire for 500 years.
Yeah,
so there's
true.
A lot of, and you know, Europe has traditionally tried to kick us out of the European realm. We're still not in the European Union, along with a lot of other countries, several other countries who have, surprise, surprise, Muslims living in them. So
the EU doesn't really like Muslims.
No.
It's not news to anyone.
Yes, right. We know that very, very well. So In that sense, it's just you know, it was I and then you know, because I live in this kind of structure, it's very difficult for me to find books except when I travel. So because the post office, surprise, surprise, also is not working because of capitalism, because they want to privatize it. So now, you know, they stopped bringing in books, or there's some kind of weird taxation on things that you can't, you know, you it's weird. You can't order anything. So and of course you don't want to order from Amazon anymore, so all of this stuff is happening. And so you and I were talking and you brought her up somehow, I think.
I think we shared
And
an interview of her or something,
then it was
probably.
like, you have to read her, and
Yeah,
then
yeah.
helped me get all these books while I was in Berlin.
Yeah,
So,
I
and
ordered you
still,
all the
even
books.
then, you ordered the books because it was apparently also very difficult for me to get the books somehow because I'm not a German citizen.
No, I think because you don't have a German bank account that you couldn't
Or
pay for them. I
something.
think that was
Yes.
about it. But also then, you know, we ordered you a bunch of books, and I think one or two still didn't make it because they were out of print or couldn't get
Yeah.
delivered. So you didn't get all of the books that I wanted you to
It
read.
was the
This is,
one.
by the way, footnote between for the two of us. It's like, this is how we are. We send each other books and give each other books all the time, which is something I love about this friendship also.
Well, of course, we're
Book
bookworms.
nerds.
But yes, and if we could do that with food and tea, I'm sure we could also.
Oh my God, sometimes I'm glad we don't live in the same city. Like, we would never ever leave the house anymore. We would just like eat, drink tea, and read books.
And read books.
Yeah.
But I think yes, the book that never got to me was her memoirs from prison,
Yeah.
which I really wanted to read. And that brings me back, circle, 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 to Woman at Point Zero.
Yeah.
So this is obviously the novel that we can find in English, and that's readily available and spoken about. She's written over 50 books, but we, you know, doesn't mean anything in our world because it all depends on the English translations that we could find. So Women at Point Zero, yes, is about a woman getting a prostitute murdering her pimp and being on death row, I think. And so, but the introduction to this book is really important because you hear about Nawal Sadawi being a doctor who goes and talks to women prisoners, and that it was very difficult to go there and to, you know, to meet them. And that she met this one particular prisoner that really mesmerized her, who was also on death row, and she was killed after that. She was murdered by the state. So she wrote her story because she gave her her story. And I think from that aspect, it's really interesting to read this book to see how society functions and why she became who she is, and also a lot of things about sexuality and children in the Arab world or in the Egyptian world that she speaks about a lot in The Hidden Face of Eve are here described in a not so, as you're saying, literary way, because she speaks with immense clarity, but it's too straightforward. It doesn't really have this kind of estrangement, let's say, that literature should have, I think. It's a little bit too on the nose.
I think it's a bit on the nose, but I think it doesn't matter, you know, because it has this, like you said, it has this clarity, it has this no bullshit thing. And also, as you said, you know, if it's based also on interview minutes basically that you took with this woman, then I'm almost unsure if these days we would describe it as a novel, you know, like with
Yeah.
the parameters that we have today, if we just would say this is like a nonfiction project.
Yes.
You know, taken over by, you know, basically the life of narrated by kind of situation, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I would like to read a little bit because we
Yes,
talk about
please.
revolutionary men and Marxists and how she felt about the left. She says, you know, as I turned over in the bed, a thought flashed through my mind. Revolutionary men with principles were not really different from the rest. They used their cleverness to get, in return for principles, what other men buy with their money. Revolution for them is like sex for us, something to be abused, something to be sold. You know, this is what a lot of her stuff sounds like. You will see the main character saying things like this, for instance. A successful prostitute was better than a misled saint. All women are victims of deception. Men impose deception on women and punish them for being deceived. force them down to the lowest level and punish them for falling so low, bind them in marriage, and then chastise them with menial service for life, or insults, or blows. Now I realized that the least deluded of all women was the prostitute, that marriage was the system built on the most cruel suffering for women. So my next question, Dasha, would be, how do you think you went to Egypt? And I want you to give us some kind of background in terms of what a writer who said such things, and let's not forget, she wrote these things in the 70s.
Yeah, in the 70s. Yeah, these books are
Okay.
older than we are.
She went to jail in the year that I was born, in 1981.
80, yeah, or 81, yeah.
So yeah, so she, she's shoulder to shoulder with the second wing, second wave feminist in France. Okay, and we don't really know about her, but I want you to tell me, like, because you've been to Egypt, you have Arabic background. Tell me about why, what's the status of Saadawi? Why should she be banned? How difficult was her was it for her as a writer to survive in this environment? And can we talk about the difference between the West, how she looks upon the West, and how she looks upon let's say Egypt or the Arabic world.
Yeah, absolutely. So
Any
I think what I want to say also, first of all, is that, what I, because usually I, as I said, it's not like language-wise, it's not that what, like, for example, when I talk about other favorite writers of mine, I always mention Etel Adnan, the Lebanese writer, and I always, like, I can go on and on about the way she writes, the sentences, the beauty, the rhythm, and the poetry and everything. This is not the case with Sadawi, So when I was prepping now for this conversation, I was thinking, like, how has she even influenced me in a sense? Because I couldn't let her go. Like, I forgot her briefly, but then, she always come back. And every time I get reintroduced, I'm like, yeah, she's amazing. It's just fucking, like, I love how radical she is. That really speaks to me. This, like, no bullshit, no nonsense, on the nose, confronting every bullshit cliche that gets thrown at you as a writer when you get interviewed, especially, I'm guessing, at an older age. We don't have footage of her as a younger woman, of course, because, technology and stuff, which I would have, really enjoyed seeing, like seeing her in her 40s or something confront an interviewer. That would have been joyful. So I came to this, I think I came to this, like, conclusion that I think what I credit her most with in terms of my own thinking is that she, for me, blew open something that, my education had locked me into. Like, yes, I have Arabic background, but I went to school in Germany. I have a German university education. Even though I have, like, comparative literature degree, it's still like you get educated in the system, or in this, like, you get infiltrated with this hierarchy where the pinnacle is the white man, of everything, of, science, politics, literature, whatever. And because I don't have the tools for that, I used to not have the tools for that, I didn't question it when I was younger, because I feel like none of us did, because we're just, like, educated in that sense. And you didn't, Goethe, yes, of course, you'd be like, oh my God, this is awful, but apparently he's great. So, this is what I remember most of my school days, that I would always feel like, this is so terrible, but, apparently I have to read it because of my degree. And so what really, like, blew my mind when I first, and I can, like, I want to read the first paragraph of her foreword of The Hidden Face of Eve, is already something where I feel like, yes, this is why I gravitated towards her, is that she showed me how Eurocentric, Western-centric, white-centric my education is, and how, like, my limited my thinking is. And there has always been this discomfort inside me when I was a young woman, because I have a different background, I have different sort of experiences than my peers, because I grew up in Saudi Arabia. I have an Arabic dad, a German mom. I'm very used to, like, switching in languages and cultures and perspectives. Yet there was this Western education that would always teach me that this other half of my life is inferior to this other, like, and I knew, like, I grew up with a lot of very strong Arabic women, and every time I would get these, like, cliches thrown at me, I was like, where do you even take them from? Like, you know, these Arab women, they're not weak. You know, you don't know my aunts, you know, it's like they will kick your ass. And, you know, yet I could never really like debunk that because, you know, I couldn't get my family into a classroom and say, look at them, you know, that kind of thing. But it took for me to read someone like Sa'dawi to understand that I was basically schooled in that kind of thinking and that my discomfort comes from a different experience that I couldn't really verbalize because I didn't have like the words, the thinking, the intellectual system to support that, you know? So she writes in the preface to the English edition of The Hidden Face of Eve, the oppression no, the oppression of women, the exploitation and social pressure to which they are exposed, are not characteristic of the Arab or Middle Eastern societies or countries of the third world alone. They constitute an integral part of the political, economical, and cultural system predominant in most of the world. Whether that system is backward or feudal in nature, or a modern industrial society that has been submitted to the far-reaching influence of scientific and technological revolution. So she opens this thing where she's like, the root of everything is economy, you know, not, you know, religion or backwards or whatever, and then you just sort of unravels with you. You're like, yeah, okay, so this is what, you know, this is what just sort of blew open my doors. I was a little bit ashamed, I have to say, at that point where I was like, oh my God, my thinking is so westernized. And I think the one thing I credit her most with is to sort of turn me into, or consciously, let's say, turn me into a global thinker, if you want to say so. Like I find I always try, even in my writing, I always try to like see everything and understand everything from every perspective possible. Like at least I try, you know? And I think this is sort of a natural thing for me because of my biography, but I think she really like taught me to be like, don't believe all this bullshit they teach you in university, you know what I mean? So I think because you were asking, how did she survive in this kind of environment? Well, I mean, you know, she was controversial until the end, you know. So, but to read like the foreword of Jumana Haddad just shows you also what she means to generations of Arabic women to verbalize something that they also didn't know how to verbalize, to be like trapped in systems that they were taught as being like God-given, you know. And I feel like it's honestly the same with Western feminism. It's like a long enough, like our grandmother's generations, they thought they had to get married and be at home, and you know, even our mother's generation, I feel like to a certain extent. So she
Yeah,
blows.
for sure. Even still, come on, it's still
Yeah, it's
happening.
true.
Why do we have trad wives and
It's
all that? What's
happening
happening in
again,
the United
yeah.
States? It's the same.
Yeah.
It hasn't changed. It's just a big portion of us
Yeah.
helped, you know, became aware of what's happening, and then we also managed to affect the state and how laws are made. But no, those things are coming back at us.
Yeah, it's
Right.
happening again, and I feel like
Yeah.
she also saw, like she's really very, very, and I think something that really resonates with me in her writing, which you also, you know, wrote to me about, is that she's so angry
Yeah.
at this like hierarchy and at this like arrogance of Western and white feminism or activism or even academia, you know, that always intends to put down the Arabs and all, especially the Arab woman, where we like we have to liberate them from the veil, these poor suppressed women. And I really feel her anger, and it really resonates with me because there's nothing that can get me railing more than when I feel like white feminist asking me, you know, if we shouldn't all liberate people from the headscarf. You know, I'm like,
Let me stop you right there because
yes.
that's a big topic, and that's I'm going to ask you next. But
Yes.
let's just briefly, because you mentioned Jumana Haddad so many times, she one of the things it's a very short foreword that she has to The Hidden Face of Eve, but it's brilliant because it is in the sense of the way in which again Sa'dawi writes. She's or should I say El Sa'dawi or Sa'dawi? I don't know.
Sadawi, El Sadawi, you can say both.
Okay, it's not like some kind of rule.
No, and El
Okay.
is just the article, so it's like Nawal
Okay.
the Sadawi, so.
Yeah, okay. Because the she openly says that she's an angry woman. I love that. I love that the beginning of that of the foreword she says. That her tone is the tone, is the angry tone of an angry woman.
Do you remember when I told you about the forward? I told you Jumana Haddad is basically you from Lebanon. It's like it's this, I read it and was like, yes, that's her. It's like it's the same person.
Thank you. I really think of that as a compliment. And also because when I was in Berlin and we were talking about al-Sadawi, one of the first things that I was asked by a German intellectual is, are you considered an angry woman in Macedonia? It's, I feel like I'm back in Berlin in August with you because it was back then that I was
I
reading the
know.
book and I was talking about this with you and I was receiving the books, and now we're at the end of the year when we're coming back to it. But and also she says something really beautiful, Jumana Haddad, and it's every single morning we women have to wake up and go to war, and that is our real destiny. Can you comment on that?
Where is that quote? I'm just looking
She
at it
says,
now.
just it's on page 14, but with Roman numerals.
Yeah, 14. Hang on.
I still can read until like 50 with Roman numerals.
Every single woman, every single morning, we women have to wake up and go to war. Now that is our real destiny. Well, I think I agree, actually.
It's
I
like,
thoroughly agree. It's like, I mean, it sounds very militant and sounds, but again, as you also said, angry woman is not something that I push away. Like, I feel is a compliment. Like, how should, also, she says the same. Like, how can we not be angry? There's so much to do and so much to sort of, create awareness for and fight for and.
which is your existence, is like a lesson. It's like, again, survival every day. And it's, again, it's the end of what, the end of the hidden face of
Yeah.
Eve. It's again this wonderful, really important thing that Sa'adawi says about freedom and women. And I connect that to the war, that you have to get up and you have to fight every day. She says, freedom has a price. A price, this is on page 383, by the way,
Yeah.
a price with a which a free woman pays out of her tranquility, her peace, her health when facing the opposition and aggression of society against her. And this is the war of society against us that Jumana Haddad is talking about in the beginning, that we wake up with. Like, I have to think about, oh, do I have healthcare in terms of my women's health? Like, do people know what endometriosis is? Will I get groped when I walk out on the street? Or will I be able to go back at home, back home late at night without worrying whether the Uber driver will do something to me or whether
Yeah.
I'll get attacked? Or like, will I get drugged if I go and I on a on an interview because, there was a
Yeah,
new.
that you'd send me that article.
Yeah,
Yeah, I mean,
like all these things.
I told you about this the other day, last week or something. I walked back from the train station because I was somewhere and it wasn't even dark. It was like dawnish. It's winter, so it's like dawnish at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So I was walking home and there was this dude really uncomfortably close walking behind me, And so I just stopped. I just like took my phone out of my pocket and pretended to look at my phone so he could just like walk past me because it made me really uncomfortable. He was just so close. And so he passes by me, but of course he understands what I'm doing, but then again, none of his business. So then, I let him go a couple of steps and then I, resume my way. And then he turns around and said, I wasn't gonna rape you, bitch. So I was like,
Wow.
you could have just apologized for being like, oh, I'm so sorry that, didn't mean to make you uncomfortable. No, somehow I offended him, because I took care of my own discomfort, So this is an act of war already, This is
Absolutely.
two, actually, two, to deal with the dude walking behind me, but also then dealing with the abuse he fires at me because I took care of myself,
It's every day.
It's
And
every
the more
day.
we talk about it and we acknowledge it,
Yes.
the better our world actually will be, because people are not even aware, of course, because woman has been hidden, as the title of this book
Yeah.
tells us, we have been hidden throughout civilization again, which she calls the dark ages of woman, because
It's like
civilization basically turned
every
us
time,
away.
all the time.
Then she says, let me continue with the quote.
Yes.
Be that as it may, a woman always pays a heavy price in any case, even if she chooses to submit. She pays it out of her health, her happiness, her personality, and her future. Therefore, since the price she has to pay, why not the price of freedom rather than that of slavery? So, yeah, that's
Yeah.
why we have to go to war every day. And she was quite, this is why people think that she's radical, because she says this openly. And this is not anything radical that we have to acknowledge that our lives are in danger, and that even if you are in the West, which is considered safe, you can end up being raped by your husband and a bunch of other people because he drugged you, like in France and in Germany and in other countries throughout
In the
Europe,
US,
in the
everywhere,
US and
yeah.
all of those places. So she's a fervent, going back to also what you said in the beginning, that I also felt like, oh my God, I don't know any of this. Like I felt when I was reading her, I thought, oh, I have been so Western centered that I completely forget, the history of this other world, which has been so heavily colonized, that we forget even the past history of all these civilizations that contributed to the civilization, quote unquote, even that we have now, that is based on so much colonialism and so much
Yeah.
war and hatred and blood. But and this is one of her main concerns in the books that she writes, which is to see how to juxtapose the West and the so-called West and the so-called East,
Middle
or let's
East.
say the Arabic world. I don't want to say Middle East because of
Well, I
her.
mean, she says the title says the Arab world, and she uses the Arab
The
world, so
Arab
I
world is
think it's
better.
fine to use it. Yeah.
Yeah. The Arab world in opposition to the Western world, to the European world, and how much we even forget about the knowledge and the strength and the history of all of everything that has been happening there in order to favor the Western world. And so yeah, I also felt the same when I was reading this book. I learned so much, like the
Yeah.
story of this,
Yeah,
I
I mean,
never.
she goes very far back also to,
Yeah.
very, very far back, which is really nice that you like get a glimpse of history of, where even like even into like ancient Egyptian history, and makes up all of these like goddesses and the structure. And she argues, which, with the Islam and that the fact that, she's deemed a critic of Islam, but she opens, I think for her, again, I think really she's a bona fide socialist, and I think for her, Islam basically at its core is a socialist project. And in that sense, I think she's not opposed to it, but I think she's opposed to fundamentalism in any shape or form, Christian fundamentalism in any kind. And I think honestly, what speaks to me a lot, as some people call me a radical humanist, is that I feel like for her, really, there is this sense of equality should be for all and under any circumstances, and that there is like no equality, like there isn't no animal is more equal than the other, so to say,
Yeah.
or as we say these days on social media, nobody's free until everybody's free and all of that. And that she argues that we have like we're all entrapped in different kind of cages, especially as women, basically since the inaugural occurrence of monotheistic religions, which I find is really funny that this is, in the time where we ha still have, all of these Greek deities or Roman deities, then women had a much better place in society than they had when, Christianity came upon us, and then subsequently Islam also, which made opened a system of male power, of patriarchy. She's very mad at hereditary principle, like men passing down property to their sons and amassing more and more property, and having women confined to the house because, economic reasons that they had to like produce children and sons so that they could amass more and more property. So, and I feel like she makes this allegory or this analogy, especially when she talks about the West, that she says, you women in the West, you aren't as free as you think because you also are entrapped in capitalism. No, I feel like she's saying to us that if we don't think about like economic independence, I think she says this at one point also, especially about the Arabic world. I don't know, I have so many quotes here, I don't even know where it is, where it says something to the effect that true liberation obviously has to come from within, and only when like all of these Arabic countries disavow basically Western colonialist projects, and work with what they have, and you know, basically tap into their own resources. You know, I'm trying to find that quote just now.
Yeah, she says that frequently, that the reason, the backwardness of the position of the Arabic woman is also because of the Western world imposing its values and impoverishing them, but also because of the economic system within the structures, the Arabic structures themselves, that also work against the women. So that it's a twofold system that needs to change, the one from the outside, but also the one from within. So she doesn't really also deny the responsibility of the Arab world for the position of women themselves. She does also take into consideration what imperialism has done and what colonialism has done, but and also what religions have done. But not that it's specifically Islam that created this, but it is specifically the economic situation and the class structure that created the inequality of women, and that religions just tapped into it or were maybe even a result of it. So the first is that when patriarchy was established, the patrilineal system, when the woman was erased from history, as even from the name, that the woman who gave birth, who did all this labor, was erased from the history of what she made, and that men took over it in order to have the name passed on so that they can pass on the inheritance. So when property was established, the idea of property, this is when everything was established also in the monotheistic religions. So first Judaism, she talks about that, then how it moved on to Christianity, and then how it moved on to Islam. So she's not pro or against Islam, or pro or against Judaism, or pro or against Christianity. She even talks about how Jesus was a revolutionary, but also you can be, it's interesting how she talks about him as well in terms of his pacifism, but also that he imposed these moral values, which were problematic. But you know, she never takes that out of the equation of the economic system. Whoever invented this idea of property and inheritance, that is when it created class, and that is when it created sexism. It
Yeah,
has nothing to do with
exploitation.
religion.
Like the exploitation is the at the root of it all, you know, for her.
And the difference between her, you know, and what a lot of leftists nowadays are saying, and this is why I really think that it's important to read her in the context of this, is that she says several times, like, woman is the most, what was it, exploited slave in
Yeah, that
history.
sounds right.
Woman is therefore the lowest paid laborer in existence.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Yeah, she women had less rights, and they were just like slaves, but also they were
Still are.
sexual, still are sexual and labor. You know, it's like sexual labor and home labor. You had to do all of these things as a woman for what? For this meager, you know, like a roof over your head and food and clothes on your body, and that's it. And it's really important to say, you know, like, we cannot talk about class differences and economics when pretending that women are not the slaves of history. So, you know, this is what she keeps reiterating throughout the book. And she does it so many times in such sharp language that, you know, fabulous.
What I love is that she, like, again with the hierarchy, right? So she really, I think she reiterates it so much or so many times for us, like you and I, especially women, to understand that this is a systemic problem, you know, and it's a worldwide systemic problem. And it's not like we cannot start if we want to be like constructing or organizing a successful feminist movement. We cannot like limit ourselves to sort of dealing with symptoms, you know, like we have to go to the root of it all. And I feel like this is what she's always saying. And because of that, she's always making the comparisons. Like she's not saying to Arabic feminists, look at the West, they're doing it so much better. Or she's not say, look saying to the Western women, look at the Arab women, they're doing it so much better. She's saying basically, and I think she says that also many times, she says, however, in this is only one aspect of the situation. Truth is many-sided. And I feel like this is something that I'm missing in a lot of like contemporary writing, is because everybody is always claiming to have the solution or the truth, you know, whereas the actual answer is yes and. Yes, and yes, there is this side, and yes, there is this side. And I feel like this is the greatest benefit of reading her, is to really like take off your sort of blinders. Because, this is something we're all guilty of. We live in the societies we live in. We deal with the problems we deal with. And for example, you and I, of course, because we live in two different countries, we have the, you also, you brought up in the US. So you also have like sort of different perspectives in your reading and your education. But still, of course, I don't know about the situation of a woman in Korea, that kind of thing. So I think it would benefit all of us to sort of zoom out more. And I feel like this is basically what she's telling us. She's telling us, girls, zoom out, look at the big picture. And I feel like that's what I'm taking from reading her. It's like, take a step back and then like assess what you can do and what your role is in the whole thing also. I mean, she's telling us to go to war. Let's go.
She went, I mean, not, let's say this is not literal war. Her way of doing war was writing books,
talking,
and
writing, protesting.
Protesting, having to go to be exiled. She spent, when she was 60, she had to move to the United States. How paradoxical is that nowadays?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
the United
so funny.
States gave her
I know.
Freedom. She went to North Carolina. She went to Duke University and stayed there.
Many people did.
Yeah. And like now, if she did that,
know.
she would probably be first thrown into some kind of weird gulag, and then, or disappeared, and then, or extradited back to her own country where they could kill her if she did that nowadays, or she did it in the meantime of, before the Trump regime came into power. But she was very, how she's still radical. It's weird because she was radical in the 70s and in the 80s, and you read her like, oh my God,
I
this
know.
still applies. This is
I
actually
think that's because we
disconcerting.
got I think that's because we got so used to this idea that things have to be complicated, which is when you read something that is so blunt and so to the point that you think it's radical. I think that's honestly the reason, because here's a quote that I underlined, which I find is so beautiful and so amazing. Like, I'm going to put that on my wall, actually, because, especially when we talk about Islam, or, I have to say that I don't feel a very comfortable authority talking about Islam, because, even though I'm a Muslim, I'm not practicing, I'm not wearing a headscarf. So this is something that I feel I'm not very versed with Islamic theology, but still I feel, because I was educated with certain set of values in this kind of culture that was passed on to me, I feel very connected to it, and I feel like, especially when she always talks about Islam at its core, at the socialist project, that's something that especially resonates with me, that, be good and be like, social and share and all of these things. Like, I don't associate Islam with killing people, So, but in the West, especially here, I don't know what it's like over
everywhere.
There for you. It's like, we had a time in Germany where there was this weird phase where there were these so-called honor killings, where young...
Air quotes so that people know.
Yeah. Air quotes, honor killings. Germans will know this. It's like, I think this is probably like in the late 90s, early 2000s, when there were, it's horrible and tragic, where especially, I think, young men or men from Turkish, Kurdish backgrounds would kill younger sisters for, having dishonored the family, for having a relationship with a German guy or something. And there were like a few of, I remember it was all very scandalous, and they were named honor killings by a German press, again air quotes, which I found really, like, I still find very troubling, find this word, as writers, we think about words, and I think this is not a very good word, because honor for me is something else, but I could never really like grasp it, because I like this concept of being honorable and having a set of ethics, I guess. So she writes, this is chapter 10, in the amazing essay, by the way, Distorted Notions About Femininity, Beauty and Love. Like, she writes extensively about the capitalization of beauty. which is also very interesting. But she writes, honor is justice and equality in human rights. Honorable love is love built on such justice and equality. I mean, how amazing is that? That is so beautiful. It's like, honor is justice and equality in human rights.
And not, unfortunately, this whole thing about honor, it's already taken, you know, I'm sure it also exists in, you know, because we also have honor killings, quote unquote. And I think it's part of so-called honor culture. And I don't know who named it as such, but I think at one point she says something about honor and how in Arabic it has a kind of, it where it came, the word started meaning one thing and then turned into something else. I'm just sifting through my notes to see if I can find it.
I have so much stuff underlined, like I cannot possibly, like,
yeah, oh
and
God,
I made like dog ears and put like post-its and stuff.
I know, this is one of the heaviest underlined books that I have.
It's insane. The whole book is like one big quotation.
It's
so please, everybody, get this book and read it, honestly.
Yes, The Hidden Face of Eve, amazing book. You mentioned so many things in your speaking. I feel like we could talk forever about this.
I know we
First,
could.
The clarity. And let's say that the clarity is revolutionary, yes, because, and I'm glad that you were bringing up language in such a way. And because especially the language of the 70s and this kind of postmodern theoretical language that was being, that we grew up in with in the West, this is what we studied with, was so difficult to deep, to un, like to decipher.
This is
for the common people, and it was something that was seen for a higher social class.
Yeah,
it's a classist language. She does not use classist language in her
that's
writing.
Very true. Yeah, that's very true.
And so it's attainable, it's inspirational because of that. And I'm a big sucker for for clarity in that
Same.
sense, because yeah, it can really stir you to do something, and it does not discriminate against those who quote understand versus those who quote do not understand.
Very
So
true.
quote unquote. So that's one thing. But with the honor killings, I wonder if, you know, like this is something also that she talks about in her book in terms of how there are killings like that, especially, but she does also say that in a different context, if I remember well as well. She says something that you know, this that if one person murders another person from another clan, she talks about how, of course, there's the Arabic world is divided into clans, and how that is also in itself a problem. And that if you kill someone from another clan, from another clan, that other clan has to take revenge either on the person who was killed or on someone who was close in the family. This is not something that we only see in the Arab world. We see it all throughout a bunch of cultures in Europe and in America. If you look at gang violence,
yeah, gang violence.
If you look at, come on, the mafia and what Italians do, it's just, it's probably what, you know, in the realms of what is called, again, I would say the honor culture. And I was reading some articles about it because I was analyzing A Streetcar Named Desire through that aspect. Because
yes.
It definitely exists in the South of America as well. That kind of code where basically the honor is in the woman's body, but it's in her sexuality. So if she becomes, because she is property, and that is what El Sadawi is telling us all the time, woman is the most valued property than all the slaves and than anything that man owns. Woman is number one property. So in respect to that, if a woman gets tainted by another person who is taking that property, another clan or any member of some other class or whatever, then it's not that man who gets punished. It's the woman who gets punished.
Yeah.
So the woman is always tainted. Sometimes
she gives this. So she gives this one really horrible example here. I don't remember where it was, but I, you know, she gives this really horrible example of retells the story of a man who had sex with basically his niece, his young niece, and then his brother, who is the girl's dad, they found out and they together plot to kill the girl.
Right,
just to
right.
protect the honor, quote unquote, of the family,
Of
which
the
I think she
family.
also says at one point, this honor is the man's honor. It's not like the woman's honor, you know?
No, she is, she, this is when the woman gets killed by her own because
Yeah.
she has been tainted. In that sense, you can look at a streetcar named Desire in that
Yeah.
way. Blanche is not killed, but she's whisked off to a mental institution with that. She's been killed in society.
Jane
But
Eyre.
yes, always. It's this, but she does mention another thing and how, in terms of these honor killings, that not the honor killings of the woman, but when a man kills a man from a different clan, then someone has to be killed from that clan because it's a man for a man. It's never, if a woman was killed, not by sexual violence, if she was just killed, they would not exact revenge because a woman is not so important as a man.
So true.
In, and so she's looking at these things through her culture. But what she's trying to tell us, I mean, she keeps reiterating because she knows as an Arab woman that the Western world would read this and say, ah, the Arabs, ah, the Muslims.
Yeah.
And so she constantly, like every once in a while, has to remind us that this is not the Arabs or the Muslims,
Yeah.
that it has to do with history, that it has to do with economics, and that the West is no better, that it's just
Yeah.
different in how it makes things happen.
I feel like it's not
So
even one every once in a while. I feel like every time she tells a story about the Arab world, like she, you know, prefaces it or like follows up with like a story of the Western world, you know? It's like she really tries to keep balance. It's amazing.
he has to, because look, this is how we read. We read with prejudice.
Yeah.
And so she has to keep on reminding us to get rid of that prejudice as we're reading it. I think, sometimes honestly, it's like I feel sad that she has to do it because I recognize myself in her.
Yeah, I
And I'll
understand what
tell
you're
you
saying.
how. It's like I'm writing, for instance, my last novel was about Balkan masculinity, of course, toxic. And so I knew. I still haven't received that because the novel has gone around the former Yugoslav countries. But the moment it hits Europe, it's going to be like, oh, the backward Balkan male, and the type of, is this common in Macedonia? Is this what you have in the Balkans? But with always this idea that we're better, that we don't
Yeah.
have this in the West.
Yeah.
So now I have to always kind of think to frame it so that I'm not sounding like I am criticizing myself in relation to the West, and I'm
Yeah.
not putting up the West on a pedestal, putting the West on a pedestal, but rather I'm saying it's just different. You have to take into consideration a lot of factors, like Elsa Dowie keeps saying in her books.
It's insane that we have to like I feel sa I get what you're saying in terms of feeling sad. I feel like for her, I mean, not knowing her, of course, just seeing her in these interview clips, I feel like she really relishes in that also. Like it's like it's fun for her to sort of slap the West every once in a while. But I get what you're saying. It's like I remember when my first novel came out, which is set in Saudi, and you know the thing that people like I was prepared for a lot of things, you know, to answer on stage. Most of them didn't occur. Like I was really prepared to be like asked, why didn't you write about Islam? Why didn't you write about Islamization? You know, because it's a family story, you know, it's not.
Yeah.
But the one question that kept occurring was, what struck me most about your novel is how non-judgmental you are, or how non-judgmental the story is towards this Arab family. And that really, like in the beginning, I didn't really understand what they meant, you know? And
I
then,
don't understand, so
you know,
please.
I think it's be I think what I should have said at that point, which I didn't say because I was young and green and didn't really like know how to play the game, was like, well, what you're just saying really sort of took the mask of your own prejudice because, you know, you're expecting me to tell you either, you know, like basically tell you what you already think about these Arabs, or just like put it on really thick that even you see it's cliche that they're so good and so nice, you know? But it's like No, they're human. They're just normal people. And I'm not judging them as a writer. And this is what struck German audience, that I'm not judging my Arab characters, which is such a sad state of affair of German readership, or especially German reviewers who, you know, or people who would interview me on stage, when I should have said, and I feel like this is what El Sadawi would have said. She would have said, well, that does say a lot more about you than about me, right? It's like, you know.
Sorry, I'm kind of shocked.
Well,
No,
I mean, you know Germany, I guess.
No, I don't. I don't, because also you are a German writer.
I am, yeah.
So it's really it's ridiculous to say that, and it's like to be so stupid about your own prejudices and to ask a question like that. This is why I'm so flabbergasted, because it's so, you know, like flagrantly dumb.
Yeah,
To say
yeah,
that.
that's a very good way to describe certain types of. No, but I feel like this is what she also does in this book, Sadawi, I mean, is that basically she knows the prejudice that will be thrown at her when she writes about these Arab societies and Arab cultures. And she knows very well about the prejudicial machine that has been fed. Also, I mean, you know, she also says this at some point, that this is also a propaganda machine that has been fed by capitalism also. And that, of course, they need fundamentalist religions also always to make themselves feel superior, you know. So she knows that this is a very well built system. Like, she's so smart. So this is
I'm
what
clear.
She keeps telling us. And, you know, me as a young green writer, I just thought, was sitting there and just thought, I'm just telling you a story about a family. You know, I was really naive. You know, I could have used her as a teacher to be like, to coach me through this very first book tour. I mean, I think nowadays I would answer differently. But I mean, the prejudice towards Arabs and Muslims in particular is, you know, is beyond. And it's like, at the moment, of course, it's like worse, an all-time bad at this moment. So it's, I feel like even now it's even more crucial for us to take her off the shelf and read her. And also to kind of, I don't know, feel like honor her, speaking of that word again. Because I don't want her to. I know a few like Muslim friends of mine who are very critical of her, because again, you know, she's seen as a critic of Islam, but I really don't think she is. You know, like you also said, you know, I don't think she just opposes when certain ideologies are, fundamentalism, and she opposes when ideologies are being used for oppression.
She's a strong critic of everything that is capitalist.
Yeah.
But also because she is true to helping her own. She is working on the emancipation of Arab women.
Yes, that's very true.
And because of that, she criticizes Arab society. And due to that, she also criticizes Islam.
Yes.
But she criticizes it. Of course, people who are fundamentalists will see this as wrong. We'll put her in jail. We'll, you know, put her on some kind of a blacklist.
Ban her
and
books,
all that.
Yeah.
Of course. She knows the world that she lives in.
Yeah.
She knows how radical that world has become. She is not radical. A
yeah.
person who propagates equality is not radical.
Well,
you know, what is radical is the systems that we're living in now. But
exactly.
They've taken away the message, you know, they've taken away that word and they've given it to us, you know, from what they are. So essentially, you know, of course that she would be seen this way also by people from the inside, because she is trying, by criticizing her world, to make it better. How else to make it better?
I mean, that's what we do all the time also, right? It's like, you know, I mean, she has this beautiful afterword, which is like basically a 9-point summation of the whole book and point
all
five.
Right.
It's like, so if you don't want to read the 400 pages, just read the 9 points of the afterwards, where she just like summarizes her all of her thesis. And point five is, the emancipation of Arab women can only result from the struggle of the Arab women themselves. Once they come an effective political force, this necessitates the formation of politically conscious, disciplined, and well-organized women's movement, and a clear definition of their objectives and methods of struggle, as well as of the rights for which women must fight.
Yes, that's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And she also notes that in the introduction, she's not saying, you know, she says something like, it would be absolutely dishonest to claim that the Arab woman has not that Arab women are not lagging behind. But you know, in that sense, she's not pretending that it's not happening, but she's criticizing it from within.
Yeah.
Now, just for the end, I really want to tackle this veil issue because she
Yeah,
also,
headscarf.
the headscarf. She's also saying she's not a proponent of the headscarf, but
No.
she's also not a proponent of the way in which the Western cosmetic or fashion industries treat the female body.
Yeah.
So what do you think about this
Well,
whole?
I mean,
What do you
the
think about, the whole veil, and sorry, not veil, what do you call it, headscarf
headscarf, veil, whatever.
situation in Europe, where
Hijab.
hijab, where it's trying to get banned, like the state is trying to ban it? Because a lot of
That's
my,
bullshit. It's
well, a
like,
lot of my liberal friends, let's say, okay, let's try to
yeah.
explain it to them. They're like, oh God, this is considered something positive if the state tries to ban it in their
Yeah.
world. And I'm never pro-banning
Yeah.
headscarves or anything like that. So what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. It's like I don't first of all, I don't wear hijab, but I, most of my family does, so it's like
Yeah.
it's not something that's alien to me. And I feel like it's the same. I can only speak to Germany or to places like France or something, where I feel like the issue has been brought up every once in a while, like every blue moon, we're gonna ban the headscarf when no other issue is there. It's always because it's something that, it feels alien to Western eye, and it's been presented always as something negative, in the press and in the pictures and everything, and it's like scary to them with women hiding or being hidden, and as a passive way. For me, I think it's not my place to tell anyone what they should or shouldn't wear, it's not none of my business. Like, I don't want anyone to tell me what I should or shouldn't wear. And it's Germany is always making a fuss about this also when it comes to, for example, like we have the state, if you're like a civil servant, for example, and if you work as a judge, for example, you're supposed to be neutral, and this also includes any sign of your religious affiliation, or so you cannot wear a big fat cross on your chest, but that automatically excludes a hijabi woman from becoming a judge, so
Right.
there, yeah, so and teachers also, there's every blue moon there's a discussion, should teachers, because teachers in Germany are mostly civil servants, should they be allowed to wear headscarves, and then it becomes this like issue on a federal level. And so I'm very much at where you are. I'm very against banning stuff, it's like,
Oh.
and especially in this case, I feel like it's the hijab gets so much negative press because, Westerners and especially Western feminists think they can liberate women and that they're being oppressed. And granted, I'm sure there is the occasional woman, especially in very strict religious countries, maybe, such as, I don't know, I would have said Saudi, but it's not that anymore, so I cannot
Yeah.
say Saudi anymore.
Well, Afghanistan, let's say
Yeah,
Afghanistan is
Afghanistan, let's
horrible.
say
Yeah.
Afghanistan, of course, that's horrible, where it's like, being put on you from the state level, and even, families where, families, fathers, husbands, but honestly, mostly women choose this for themselves. And again, I'm always for women choosing whatever makes them happy and whatever they feel they want to do. So I'm not bothered by any woman wearing a hijab. That doesn't define them for me. And I feel like in that sense, I'm guessing Sa'dawi would argue similarly. I don't think she can be bothered if she's like an Egyptian. Although we have to
Like the
say that,
headscarf, she doesn't like it for
no, as a concept.
yeah. But I think she makes a very important point about how it actually the state controls the woman's body,
Yeah, that's very
and in that
true. There's
sense,
a whole chapter in the book also.
right.
Yeah.
And in that sense, it's also the state controlling what the woman wears, and
Yeah.
that is beyond sexist. So, and not only to say that it's white saviorish from, to say, oh, I'm going to liberate you Arab women from the headscarf or the veil or the hijab or whatever. It's then not allowing them to get rid of it themselves, like
Yeah.
what's happening in Iran,
Yeah.
for instance.
Exactly. Yeah.
But forcefully making them get rid of it, which could create an enormity of problems, from the fact that they have, a lot of parents or fathers would be maybe even aggressive towards their daughters if they leave the house like that. And so they wouldn't leave the house, and then they would deny them an education and also so many different forms. So you cannot impose your will on the woman as a state, because the state, as she says at one point, she says something like, the state started to take the position of the father in the patriarchal, in the family mode. So in that sense, she is critical, but she's also critical of how of the she calls those changes in tradition of, the westernized world also telling women what to wear and how little to wear and what kind and what to do with their faces now with surgery. She would probably have something to say
She
about
would
them, or
have
a lot
something
to
to say.
say.
I was gonna say exactly the same thing. She would have something to say about the Mar-a-Lago fest. Do you know, by the way, that in Germany we actually have this what you say, like proverb or metaphor? We actually say "Father State." We call it "Vaterstaat." It's like which is maybe why I'm having such a problem with the state also. I mean, I think she would always be pro-choice, now what I mean, with
Surely not saying the state should control what a woman wears.
exactly, or the father, or the husband, or whatever. If you choose to wear a headscarf, please do that, but choose it for yourself, even though I don't like, she would say, even though I like don't like the concept. So yeah,
I'm not sure, like this whole thing of freedom of choice when you're submerged in capitalism and patriarchy is very difficult to define. Like, is it really choice sometimes?
I
The
don't know. I mean, that's always
problem.
like, capitalism makes us think we have a choice, but we really don't choose it. We choose what the algorithm chooses for us. And sometimes I also feel like, for example, one of my cousins told me this once, where she said, in Egypt, I'm guessing also the 60s Egypt, where Saadawi was a young woman, was a very liberated place, was like very westernized, and women would wear short skirts and, no headscarves whatsoever. And then came a backlash, and that women of that generation were particularly irritated because a whole generation of daughters suddenly rebelled in the form of putting on headscarves, so that was their form of rebellion, to be like, no, just I'm just gonna wear my hijab now.
Very
So,
interesting.
yeah, that's she has a book on the whale, the woman and the veil, but I couldn't find it. Like,
Which I think.
I'm gonna go into a deep dive research now and try and find it. But then again, I feel like these days we have much more important issues than.
Well, I would, I have to argue because I live in a state that, has a huge Albanian minority, like 25% or something like that. And so a lot of the women, the Albanian women, they wear hijabs, and the Turkish women as well. We have a lot of Turkish women as well. And, I feel that they're just their appearance is immediately, people are immediately judging them. It's annoying to be, because very commonly they're in my classroom as well, and I can see with the other students really kind of being thrown aback by what they're wearing, And so I think sometimes, it is important to talk about these things in depending on the social context. We should wrap it up.
We should wrap it up. We've been talking. I mean, you and I can talk forever, but we really should wrap it up. So,
I just want to say just a sec, just a little bit about what else we can find in the hidden face of these things that we can talk about is female circumcision.
Oh, yeah, we haven't talked about that at all. That is
No,
like, oh.
it's just we will have people read it for themselves. It's very disconcerting. Incest, and actually, and also m among children, rape of children. And she tackles even child sexuality, she talks about in some situations, which is
Child
extremely,
marriage.
very, very taboo topics that she tackles, that I haven't seen people tackle in general. And so, in that sense, she is one of the bravest, in many ways, she is one of the bravest authors I have ever
She
read,
really
and
is.
absolutely admirable.
Oh, I'm so happy that I got you into her. And also, like,
Yes.
again, can we reiterate, why is she not translated? It's like, honestly, it's a mystery to me. It's just.
It's
Let's,
sad.
but again, it's a vampire theme that these women were interested in are basically not being spoken of, which again, hello, patriarchy. Thank you so much for doing this, my dear. That was such a pleasure and so much fun. Let's do it
I
again. I
know.
know.
Thank you for having me as a co-host and to our listeners. This was Rasha Kayat talking about Nawal
And Romana Budzielowska
Al-Sadawi.
interviewing me, and we're gonna continue this on a personal level. And I'm gonna say Happy New Year, my dear, and thank you so much.
Happy New Year to you, and I hope that the next year is much better than what we all
Oh,
experienced in
inshallah, to say it in Arabic.
Corona.
Das war die neue Ausgabe von Vampire, dem Podcast über Frauen, die schreiben. Diesmal in einer speziellen Reverse Edition mit Romana Bujalowska als Co-Host, mir selbst als Gästin und Nawal El-Sadawi als unsere Heldin. Vampire wird wie immer produziert von Katrin Albrecht und Asya Kurtuldu. Alles, worüber wir sprechen, findet ihr wie immer in den Shownotes verlinkt und wir freuen uns, wenn ihr uns auf Instagram unter vampire-podcast folgt und uns auf der Plattform eures Vertrauens abonniert und uns auch dort ein paar Sternchen hinterlasst. Ich sage Danke, mein Name ist Rasha Khayat und bis zum nächsten Mal.